890 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Everyone says they want to have a great marriage and family and personal life. Well, the theology of the body reveals how you can actually achieve it.
More to life.
The happiest couples know how to say I do to each other every moment of every day.
Surprising. Relevant. Hopeful.
Angela, let's not just settle for stopping your son's behavior.
Exactly. Let's talk about the kind of young man you want to be.
Practical. Theology of the body-based answers for every part of your life.
God's original blueprint didn't include depression and anxiety.
Yeah, that's a human invention. God wants to set you free. Let's talk about making that happen.
The life you were meant to live through the theology of the body. More to life.
Hey there, folks. You are listening to More to Life, where we explore the life you were meant to live through the theology of the body. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
And today we are talking about parenting. Parenting is a tough job. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but it is hard.
If you haven't noticed it, then you might not be parenting at the moment. You might not. It might be that you parented a long time ago. I did have an experience with an older lady at church one day who it required all my self-discipline not to really go off on, because she was saying, she was a much older lady, and she was saying, I don't get all these moms with all these preschool kids or these homeschooling moms. We call them and we ask them to make cookies for events, and they tell me they're too busy. Now, we come from a parish where, like, the smallest family starts with three kids. And we, you know, a friend of ours just had her 10th the other day, who's part of our parish. These are busy moms. And that mom who had her 10th is a homeschooling mom. And she was just like, they don't want to make cookies. They say they don't have time. And I'm thinking, you're retired. That's your Titus II job, is to make the cookies and support those moms who are still raising their kids. You might have forgotten how hard it is, or you might not be in the trenches yet, and you need to know how to do it once you get in there. So we'll give you some tips and techniques on that. But the chances are, if you're parenting now, or if you have parented, you know it's the toughest thing you can do out there. You wake up in the morning, you have these grand plans, and then your eyes meet their eyes, and those plans start to fray at the seams very, very quickly.
You know, Pope John Paul II gave us this theology of the body as a way of articulating his reflections on God's plan for our relationships with others, with God. And the TOB actually applies to parent-child relationships as well, and it kind of gives us a blueprint, if you will, for how to create families that we can really be proud of and be pleased to be part of. And that's what we're going to be unpacking here today on More to Life. Are you struggling in your parent relationship? When do you feel most challenged as a parent? You know, what situations with your kids cause you to doubt yourself? I was talking with somebody the other day, and I made the observation, you know, they had a 7-year-old, and I said, you know, what is it about kids that enable them to push our buttons to the point where we always feel about a year or two younger than they are? So, you know, you have a 7-year-old, and the parent suddenly feels like a 5-year-old trying to discipline the 7-year-old.
And we think that 7-year-old has so much more power than we do. Just something really quirky seems to happen to our brains when we get into that situation.
So we're going to kick things off on this parenting talk today by examining the most important task that every Catholic parent has, especially in light of the theology of the body. We'll be taking a look at that. Also, a little bit later on in the program, Marcel Lejeune, who is the author of Set Free to Love, will be joining us to talk about the theology of the body and fathering. We'll be talking about that with him a little bit later on in the program. And we're taking your calls right now at 877-573-7825. Again, that toll-free number, 877-573-7825. If you've got some parenting stuff that's driving you crazy today and you're looking for some faithful, practical answers to get you back on track, to help you fall back in love with your kids, to maybe get control of that temper that has you screaming a little bit more than you would like, or to get control of those behaviors that are bringing chaos and frustration to your household. We're here to help you with that and a whole lot more. 877-573-7825.
We're also taking your questions at mortallifradio.com. Now, not your
questions at mortallifradio.com.
That's true. Questions at mortallifradio.com. Mortallifradio.com or mortallifradio is what to look up on our Facebook page, where we hope you will follow us and answer our questions of the day and become part of the big community that's growing over on Facebook. I know some of you are saying, no, I just gave it up for Lent. Well, join us after Lent if you have, but if you haven't, please start joining us today.
Becoming a fan of this show is a great Lenten penance, Lisa. Yeah, so you can find us on Facebook at More to Life Radio. All right, well, you know, let's bring our concerns before the Lord as we enter into this conversation about parenting in the name of the Father,
and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Lord Jesus Christ, we thank you for the gift of our families, and we thank you for the gift of the children that you've given to us. Help us to appreciate that gift and the blessing of our children. Help us to be able to teach our kids how much you love them. Help us to teach them to love you most of all and to share your love with the people who share their life. Help us as well, Lord, to learn the lessons of love and generosity you want us to teach through them so that we can be the parents, the people you're calling us to be. And we ask all of this through the intercession of Mary and in the name of the Father,
and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. We are talking with you at 877-573-7825 about the challenge of parenting. But, you know, the one thing that the theology of the body, I think, really does is clarify for us parents what the most important job of parenting really is.
And a lot of people would say, well, why do we need it clarified for us? We think we know. Whatever is driving us craziest at that moment, that's the most important job, right? Or whatever the hot button issue is in the news that week. So a couple of weeks ago, it was academics with the whole Tiger Mother thing. Today, I caught on the news that they're doing the pacifier wars again. Should we? Shouldn't we? There's always a hot button issue. But the theology of the body tells us that there's a much greater purpose to our parenting than whatever happens to be in the headlines that day.
Well, you're absolutely right, Lisa. I mean, you know, the tendency for parents, all parents, is to focus on putting out the fire that's in front of us right now. The theology of the body, I think, really asks parents to go a little bit deeper. You know, the whole reason behind Pope John Paul II's theology of the body was to articulate what he called, quote, an adequate anthropology, end quote. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means a worldview. To really help Catholics in the new millennium get a sense of what's our mission, what's the worldview that we're trying to live up to and to promote in the world. You know, what's the view of other people that we're supposed to have? What's the view of life and our reaction to it that we're supposed to have? That's what he meant by an adequate anthropology. Where do we come from? Who are we? Where are we going?
And how do we instill that in our children, so that they'll grow up to be healthy, happy Catholic people?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's exactly the same job that a parent has, right? So where Pope John Paul II was concerned with passing on that vision to all the people of the world, it's our job as parents, and the most important job, frankly, as parents, to pass on that same kind of worldview to our kids. Because unless our kids have a clear sense of their mission as young men and young women, unless our kids have a clear understanding of what God's expectations are of them with regard to their relationships with peers or with their brothers and sisters or with mom and dad, then, you know, they don't understand then how to live out their faith in their everyday life and circumstances. And that's the most important task of parenting, conveying that worldview that helps our kids know who God wants them to be and how God wants them to behave, and why. You know, what's the mission that they're trying to serve? And, you know, the theology of the body tells us that we need to look to the body in order to get a clearer sense of God's plan for relationship. And when we're trying to pass on this worldview, there's some really interesting stuff that's coming out of some new brain research that talks about when these kinds of worldview issues are settled. So, for instance, you know, in the theology of the body, Pope John Paul II really emphasizes that at the core of our worldview needs to be this drive for self-donative love, you know, a strong moral sensibility, empathy, self-donation, you know, that generosity that allows us to use all of our time and treasure and talent and even ourselves to work for the good of others. Well, some brand new research really shows that although a person's capacity for those qualities like empathy and moral sensibility and love and self-donation, they can be increased at any stage of life. They can be improved upon at any stage of life. There's actually a critical period in brain development that God established for laying the neurological foundations for empathy and self-donation. Because there's actually an organ in the brain. Think of it as the social organ. The you know, just like you have a sense of sight or a sense of taste, a sense of touch, a sense of smell, there's a social sense in the brain. And there's and although you can develop it at any point in your life, you can expand on it at any point in your life, there's kind of a best time in your child's life to really lay the foundation, the physiological foundation, for empathy, for self-donation, for that moral sensibility. And that time frame is 12 to 18 months.
Now, I think for a lot of Western parents, that kind of makes your tires go, argh. Because 12 to 18 months is this time where we're helping our children develop empathy. How's the best way to do that? By responding to your children's cues, by rushing to them when they have a boo-boo and kissing it and making a big deal out of it and helping them feel good about it, helping them show empathy toward their siblings if one of their siblings gets hurt or one of their siblings is upset. There's a lot of emotional input that a child needs from 12 to 18 months to help them become this empathetic person. Now, here in the States and in most Western countries, we hit about 12 months now, and a lot of parents go, okay, I'm done. It's time to get them out the door to playgroup. It's time to get them out the door, yeah, to preschool at 12 to 18 months. It's time to not respond so much. They need to toughen up. And what we're seeing with brain development is that it is still very much that baby stage where we need to be cooing and cuddling and loving and easing the hurts and teaching the child to do the same for others.
Yeah, because again,
just saying, okay, goodbye.
Because again, we're not talking about an intellectual sense of self-donation or moral sensibility or an intellectual appreciation of the need to love or be self-donative at 12 to 18 months. We're talking about a gut-level sense of that. And that gut-level sense of that is programmed into the brain through affection, through a close connection with mom and dad. God designed the brain to be able to support all these virtues that he wants us to live out. And like I said, although you can develop that capacity at any point in your life, that's, you know, even in adulthood, that's what therapy is supposed to be there for, to help you do, right? You can develop that capacity. It's a lot easier if you lay the groundwork at the right time. And so having that quality relationship, you know, the affection, the self-donation that we model and the self-donation we require from our kids in return, especially up to the months leading up to 12 to 18 months, that's really critical for laying the neurological foundation for all those virtues that we're going to want to teach as parents who are mindful of the theology of the body later on.
I think this is, the brain science behind this is really important for those questions that a lot of parents get into battles with. You know, I know a lot of couples where one parent, and it's not necessarily divided along gender lines, sometimes it is, one parent will still be, you know, rushing to a 12 to 18 month old when they fall and hurt their knee, or they're crying, or they're upset, or they're angry, and being very emotionally present. The other parent might start at a year old to 18 months old saying, hey, you know, back off a little bit. This kid needs to toughen up. This kid needs to get a little bit more independence. And often you end up with that, you know, co-parenting war on who's right here. Well, we're seeing from the actual brain science that to err on the side of being more attentive, more affectionate is going to help your child become that empathetic, loving, fully integrated person as they grow up.
You know, theology of the body offers a lot of really important insights into every kind of relationship that we have, both as adults and with our children. And so if you've got questions about how to get more out of your parent relationship, out of your family, we're here to help. 877-573-7825. Let's go to Therese in Michigan. Therese, welcome to More to Life. How can we help you out today?
Hi. I'm calling because my daughter's teacher told me yesterday that, she told me in the fall at parent-teacher conferences that my six-year-old daughter does not talk to her, doesn't talk to the teacher. She doesn't even respond to greetings and, you know, things of that nature. When she wants my daughter to read to her, during independent reading, she won't read or reads very, very softly where she can hardly hear her. And then I've noticed she really doesn't talk to any adults. If we're in the community, if an adult says something, you know, would you like some candy or something, or she won't say anything. She'll just look at me. She won't say thank you. She doesn't talk to grandma. She will on the phone a little bit, but face-to-face, she won't say anything.
Will she talk to you?
This is really a problem. Oh, yeah. She's very social with her friends.
So she'll talk to you. Will she talk to dad?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with you and with dad, she's comfortable. With kids around her own age, she's comfortable. Any adults at 6 years old, she's not so comfortable, and it's even going into her school life with adults she trusts and sees every day, like the teacher.
Are there any other adults that she does talk to besides you and your husband?
Not really. I mean, we don't have tons of contact with other folks because we moved to this area about 6 months ago, and we don't know anybody here.
Okay.
We did visit some old friends recently, and she kind of talked a little bit, but that person's kind of the type to kind of pull her out of herself a little
Therese,
bit more.
Therese, let me ask you. You moved there 6 months ago. You don't know anybody now. To the best of your recollection, and I realize this was sort of just brought to your attention, and you didn't really recognize it because she was talking to you just fine. In your old environment, was she talking to adults then? Would she talk to grandma?
I don't think
would
so.
She? It's not new.
We didn't see grandma because we were too far away. We didn't see grandma for the last 3 years before that.
Oh, okay. So grandma's pretty much a stranger too.
Yeah, that's true. But she would talk to her on the phone. She'd be dying to talk to grandma on the phone. But then when we moved back to the area, we're actually 2 hours away from my folks now. But after the few visits we've had since we've been back, she doesn't really talk to grandma.
So she would talk to grandma on the phone, even though she hadn't really seen her.
Yeah.
And now that you've moved, so this is at least being very ramped up in the last 6 months since the move.
But you know what? When I think about it, back where we were before, I mean, she's always been pretty quiet around adults. Like I said, in the community, if anybody would say something to her, she wouldn't talk. She doesn't talk to other adults. I don't think, you know, her kindergarten teacher never said anything, but I just have a feeling her teacher, I didn't really care if my daughter talked to her or not.
Okay. And now it's becoming more important. I think that what we're going to be able to do here is use the rehearsal technique to help her develop that confidence and that skill of dealing more effectively with other adults. I'd like you to actually, start taking stock of different situations where it would be helpful for her to talk to an adult. So, for instance, you said, you know, if somebody offers her something, you know, that she tends to look to you and that she won't say thank you afterward. Well, you know, one thing to do there, let's practice this, honey. What's your daughter's first name, just so I know what to call her?
Ava.
Okay, so we're going to say, you know, Ava, I'd like you we're going to pretend that I'm that stranger, okay? And I'm going to, offer you whatever it is, right? And I want you to look at me and pretend that I'm that stranger and respond, you know, appropriately, and you kind of coach her through what to say. And then I'm going to give that thing to you, and I want you to say thank you. And, you know, you really kind of work through it with her and role play it the way you'd like to see her do that. Same thing with the teacher. Get a couple of different situations where, for instance, if she's supposed to read aloud to the teacher, I would like you to, you know, have her, we're going to have read aloud practice. You know, I want you to pretend that I'm your teacher, and I'm asking you to read aloud, and let's see how you do this, okay? And if she reads quietly or whatever, just, you know, encourage her to use her stronger voice. Coach her through it. Actually, role play these different scenarios. And you might say, well, you know, I don't know if that'll work because she does talk to me and she does talk to her dad. But it's kind of funny when little kids especially pretend that brings back those feelings that they feel in those situations that they're pretending about. So you'll probably see at least some change in her behavior. Maybe she wouldn't be as quiet as she would be with the teacher, but she'll be quieter than she would normally be with you. Maybe she won't be as awkward as she would be around that stranger, but she'll be a little more awkward than she normally would be with you. And by coaching her through that in a loving way, be very careful not to be too, angry or hostile or,
I'd like to see you be kind of funny about it. You're pretending to be the teacher during reading group, maybe put on a pair of glasses and make her call you by the teacher's name, that kind of thing. Use some humor with it a little bit.
But role-playing these different situations ought to give her a little bit more confidence and help ingrain it in her muscle memory so that she's actually able to, produce that response under similar situations in the future.
Now, very quickly, because we need to call this short to move on, but here's the thing. I would love for you to pick up a book called Protecting the Gift by Gavin DeBecker, because what you want is to be able to get a good balance between her strengths of knowing who she can talk to as adults and feel strong about that, and also not get away from the fact that she's a little bit shy of adults and she needs to be able to feel like she knows what adults are appropriate and what aren't. There's some great exercises you can do with her in there that will not be frightening at all, that will really help. Protecting the Gift by Gavin DeBecker.
Therese, thanks so much for the call. If there's more that we can do to support you here, you know where to find us. We'd be happy to talk with you again. Let us know in a couple of weeks how this is going, and we're going to add you guys to our Mortal Life prayer list as well. When we come back, folks, Marcel Lejeune, he's the author of Set Free to Love, is going to be talking to us about the theology of the body and fatherhood. And what we need to know is Catholic dads out there to really step up to that image of fatherhood that the theology of the body encourages. Stick around for more Mortal Life coming up right after this.
During this recession, many investors are afraid to invest in stocks or bonds. It may actually be a good time to invest, since prices are now low. At Ave Maria Mutual Funds, we believe our professional investment experts have positioned the portfolios to take advantage of the economic and market recovery we expect over the next few years. Now may be an opportune time to examine your portfolio and see if the Ave Maria Mutual Funds could help you achieve your goals. To learn more about the pro-life and pro-family Ave Maria Mutual Funds, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA to receive a free investor kit, or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Hey guys, Tom Lowy here. This world's a mess, and a lot of times it's a mess because we guys aren't doing our job as Christian men, and that's got to change. We want to be better fathers, better husbands, better men of faith. That's why I'm telling you about the Accept the Challenge Men's Conference at the Lansing Center on Saturday, April the 2nd. The conference features three speakers who will bring you to your feet and then put you on your knees. Guys like Mike Cumbie, a Protestant pastor for 20 years, when suddenly he hears God calling him to his true home. Or how about Richard Lane, son of Night Train Lane? Remember him? This guy's a former street corner preacher who shows men how to preach and live the gospel. And then we got Steve Wood, who's going to talk about that three-letter word that gets a lot of us guys in trouble. You know what I'm talking about. Chastity. Yeah, chastity. And how to fight off the temptations of pornography and how to be a man of God. You interested? Just go online and register at accepttechallenge.org. Seating's limited, so register now and put April 2 on your calendar. I'll see you there.
You're listening to More to Life, and I'm Lisa Popchak.
I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, and joining us right now is Marcel Lejeune. He's a husband and father of five and the assistant director of campus ministry at St. Mary's Catholic Center at Texas A&M University. That's the largest campus ministry in the country. He's the author of Set Free to Love, Lives Changed by the Theology of the Body. And he's here today to talk with us about fatherhood in the light of the theology of the body. Marcel, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jill, Minnesota.
I guess yeah, we really are.
It is an absolutely gorgeous day outside, about 65 and sunny.
And oh, well, we're jealous.
Well, now that we're all extremely jealous.
It's a little cloudy here in Steubenville, Ohio, but that does not put any kind of damper on our mood here on More to Life today. We wanted to talk a bit, though, about this. We've been talking about parenting in general on the program, but we wanted to reflect a little bit on fatherhood, and especially the contrast between the image of fatherhood that's often portrayed in the media, especially on sitcoms and you know, pop culture, versus the image of fatherhood that one can get from the theology of the body. Talk to us a little bit about that, Marcel.
Well, I tell you this. If you think about what's going on in the pop media right now, and you can think about both commercials and, as you said, these sitcoms, but it even crosses over into advertisement, a print advertisement in other ways. Fathers are now being portrayed as bumbling idiots. That's probably the best way you could advertise it for us. Think about Homer Simpson. Homer Simpson is this, for the most part, he's a well-meaning guy, but he's a complete idiot. He can't get anything right. He, you know, drinks too much. He's corrosive to the family structure. He's just not a good guy when he comes down to being a good parent. And then you got these sitcoms where fatherhood is denigrated. The guys can't, you know, put two and two together. The wives pretty much can't stand the guy because he's usually, he can't relate to her. He doesn't understand her. He has no feelings. He's selfish. He just wants to watch TV or eat or drink beer. And the kids, he doesn't understand at all. He doesn't understand how to use a cell phone at all, and therefore he can't relate to his kids. He doesn't know how to talk to them. They just kind of blow him off and roll their eyes the entire time. And Dad's clueless about all of this. He doesn't even understand that his wife thinks he's a bumbling idiot. His kids can't stand him. And this is the way that fathers are treated in the media right now. And as a father, I got to tell you, I find it offensive. Because if you flip this around, in our modern culture, if you were to portray women in this way constantly, there would be an uprising. And I think it's become culturally acceptable to denigrate fathers right now.
I can't agree with you more. And frankly, we have an 18-year-old son who sees this very clearly and seethes because it's actually affecting the single guys who are, you know, hoping to get married one day because women are really being formed in this and have been. Mm-hmm. Frankly, this has been a slippery slope downhill since the 80s. I mean, this started with, you know, the Cosby Show, where you had a father who was a physician, and yet at home, his wife treated him like an idiot, his kids treated him like an idiot, and it really has affected the mindset of the culture.
Yeah, and at least with the Cosby Show, and the, you know, back then, he was a good-hearted man. Now they're not even good-hearted men.
True.
Now what they are is guys who are only out for their own pleasure. Now it's guys, you know how best I could describe it, Lisa? It would be as if the 16-year-old modern male fantasy has come to life for all these fathers and the way they're portrayed. So in other words, it's the guys are only interested in sex and pleasure and food and looking out for number one. That's it. So they don't understand their kids. They don't get along with their wife. You know, it's just, it's pitiful is what it is.
And so that's the model that we're exposed to in pop culture. And really, I mean, that's what we're bombarded with. That's how most men are formed these days. Into this scene comes the theology of the body, and that has a very different message for fathers. Tell us about that.
Well, the Pope John Paul II in the theology of the body, and he also started it before he even wrote the theology of the body, he did in Love and Responsibility. He talks to young people in particular, and he starts to understand what the problems are, and he starts to reflect on that in these writings. And I would say that the way that I have kind of drawn out of the theology of the body four things that can help guide us as fathers, and that is to respect, protect, love, and serve. Respect. And this is something, when we say respect nowadays, it's not as if, oh, you know, you're disrespecting me. You know, it's become kind of cliche. So respect in this context means to respect the human dignity of another person. It means to respect them for who they are in God's image and likeness. It means to respect not just what they do, but their being. And so the way we do this is we have to look past what other people do. And as a father, every father, every parent knows, sometimes your kids are going to annoy the heck out of you. they're just not going to be behaving very well. They're not going to be doing the things they ought to do. And as a parent, if we give in to the temptation to allow ourselves to not respect our children, then we're not guiding them properly in being formed as human beings.
Because ultimately they need to know that they are treasured by us. And that
absolutely.
That, you know, that
no matter what they do.
Which leads, I guess, into the second point, that we need to protect mm-hmm. them as well. You know, as we treasure them, we need to protect them as fathers. Talk to us about what that means.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, a lot of people believe that protecting kids is the least important in some respects. Now, when I say that, of course, every parent's going to have that natural parental instinct to protect them from the things that are right above them that are threatening them. So if somebody breaks into your house, of course they're going to protect them. But I mean to protect them even from themselves and even from their base desires. So that means we have to educate them in being human. We have to educate them in how to live properly. So, for instance, I have five kids. I got four daughters and a son. And my son is going to be tempted in ways that males are tempted. And my daughters are going to be tempted in ways that females are tempted. Do we form our children in order to protect themselves from the culture, but also from their own base desires that come internally and from the temptations that come from the devil?
And I think that protecting is different from sheltering, too, because we have to make sure that we're not just saying no to the kids and forbidding them from doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
We have to actually teach them, as fathers in particular, godly ways to meet the needs that are on their hearts. And
absolutely.
That's the best way to protect them.
Yeah, and if you do shelter them, what's going to happen is that the culture is going to hit them upside the face at some point, and they're not going to be prepared to encounter it, engage it, and change it.
Well, I'm sure you see that a lot in campus ministry. But let's talk about the third point, love. You know, so the fourth thing here, that fathers need to love. But the, you know, and everybody, of course, has warm feelings for others in their heart.
Oh,
and that's what it means to love. But Pope John Paul II is talking about a different dimension of love here in the theology of the body.
Yeah, and I give a simple definition to my both to my students here in my campus ministry and to my children. And this is how I define love. Love is choosing what's best for the other person despite what it might cost me. So it's about the other person, not me. It's about my choice to say that person's interests and their needs go above and beyond mine. And that's what true love is. And that's exactly how Christ loves us and calls us to love others. So if we can do that for our children and teach them that, that means there's got to be sacrifice. That means you've got to choose it in the things, even when it's hard. And I'll tell you, it really does make a difference when you can walk somebody down the path of choosing love. And with our children, this is ultimately so important because when they can do that, it really starts to help them understand that love isn't just the emotions. Love isn't just this feeling. But it's something deeper and more permanent, and it's based in our intellect.
It's a commitment to work for the good of the other person, even if it means me leaving my comfort zone behind. Which leads to the last point, serve. Serve selflessly. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Well, this might be the most concrete of all of them. And this is the one I think children really can understand. It's that we're going to go out of ourselves in order to choose to do what other people need. So, for instance, my son, he's 9 years old. He's the only boy in the family, and he's got three younger sisters and one older. But he is very gentle with his younger sisters. And we've taught him that part of his job is to serve, as a man, his sisters and his mother primarily, but also the rest of his family and his friends. And he does so, and I start to see this service, then it comes out to him, and it's really Christ-like, to tell you the truth, because he finds pleasure as a 9-year-old boy in this service.
It's a beautiful thing, because when we can model that service, then we can encourage it in our kids as well. So there we got it, the four things: respect, protect, love, and serve. Marcel, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Marcel Lejeune, the author of Set Free to Love. His website, thecatholicevangelist.com. Check it out, some great resources there if you want to learn more about Marcel's good work. Thank you for being with us today, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, and God bless you guys up in Ohio.
God bless you. If you have questions about parenting, that's what we're talking about today, making it easier on you and applying the insights of the theology of the body to take your family to the next level. Stick around for more. More to Life coming up after this.
The Pi Missionaries are an institute of Catholic priests and brothers who dedicate their lives to the mission among non-Christians in 17 countries. They're creative in their missionary presence, proclaiming the gospel and promoting understanding among religions and cultures.
Pine has had a presence in Southeast Michigan for over 60 years. From their headquarters in Detroit, they collaborate with the Archdiocese in serving the local church, expressing their missionary spirit. You can learn more about the Pine Missionaries at pineusa.org or look for them on Facebook.
This program is made possible in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, dedicated to helping grow businesses for a strong community of faith and Christian values. CatholicBusinessPages.com is your online directory resource for connecting you with businesses that have taken a strong stand to support those values that impact our lives. If Christian principles make a difference in your life, then CatholicBusinessPages.com will link you to business professionals who care about the values of our nation. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
You now have two great Detroit area locations for religious merchandise. There's A. Mutea Church Supply in Garden City and now G.A. Fuchs Church Supply in Madison Heights. Between the two stores, they offer the largest selection of religious merchandise in southern Michigan, with everything from statuary, rosaries, and crucifixes to a large inventory of books. If you need it for your religious group or services, they have it. A. Mutea and G.A. Fuchs Church Supply. Just choose the location closest to you. You'll find A. Mutea Church Supply on Ford Road, just east of Merriman Road in Garden City. If you'd like to call for more information, the number is 734-513-2950. Write it down, 734-513-2950. If you're closer to Madison Heights, you can stop at G.A. Fuchs Church Supply on Stevenson Highway, just south of 14 Mile Road, off I-75. You can call them at 248-589-0200. You'll want to write that one down, too. 248-589-0200. They look forward to serving you.
Hi, this is Dr. Greg Popchak. We all know it takes a lot of hard work to create and sustain an enduring marriage, but what's the first step in achieving a marriage made for heaven? Well, a good place to start is to check with God. Ask God every morning how He wants you to love your spouse that day, and spend at least 5 minutes listening to His answer. Then take at least five more minutes each day praying as a couple about anything in your marriage where you need God's counsel and guidance. Now put the fruit of your prayer into action. Each and every day, think of one request or need that your spouse expresses where your first instinct is to say, no. Assuming it's not immoral or personally demeaning, take a deep breath and choose instead to say yes and cheerfully meet that need or request. These small and relatively easy first steps will start you and your spouse on the road to a happy and enduring marriage. And for more help in creating a marriage made for heaven, visit mortalliferadio.com.
Welcome back to More to Life. I'm Lisa Popchak.
I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, and we are talking about parenting and the theology of the body, the insights that Pope John Paul II had to marriage and family life. You know, Archbishop Chaput once noted that of all the things the Church has ever written on marriage and family life, Pope John Paul II wrote about two-thirds of it, which is just mind-blowing. But what's exciting for us as married people and parents is that there is more guidance than there ever has been for Catholic couples and Catholic families on what it really means to be that Catholic family, to stop settling for the image of marriage and family life that the world has to offer and start living a really grace-filled, abundant marriage and family life. We've got the blueprint. We've got the technology. We can help you rebuild your life. Join the conversation at 877-573-7825. If you are struggling in some area with your kids, if you feel challenged as a parent, if you found some situations that are causing you to doubt yourself, or you're just feeling burnt out and you need to figure out how to get the joy back in your heart when you're around those kids, we want to hear from you. 877-573-7825.
We're also taking your questions at questions@mortalliferadio.com. Stop settling for what the secular world tells us, that parenting is a drudgery, that it's joyless, that it's thankless. Find that there is so much more to your life and to your parenting. You can find joy. You can find success. You can find everything that is edifying for you and leads you and your kids to Christ.
You know, it was funny when you just said, stop listening to everything the secular world has to say about how parenting is a drudgery. Yet another one of those studies, I just saw it yesterday, actually. Yet another one of those studies that says, you know, basically, don't have kids because they're so darn expensive came out again.
Oh, man.
You know, one of these reports that said it costs now about $198,000 to raise a kid from, you know, birth through 18. And so, therefore, you know, I'm thinking, so what's the upshot? It's cheaper to die old and alone? I mean, what are you trying to say to me here? If I'm going to spend my money on something, I mean, first of all, I think that's a ridiculous figure. I can't imagine it actually costs that much for birth to 18. If we're talking about adding college in there, okay, well, I can see that. But really?
Well, in number, you know, the more you have, the cheaper it is, because they reuse stuff.
There you go.
You know, so the second one doesn't cost as much as the first one.
All of a sudden, I feel like the cheaper by the dozen guy.
It's true, though. It's very, very true. I mean, I'm still using, you know, because we homeschool, I'm still using textbooks and things that weren't consumable with our now 5-year-old that I used with the guy who's going off to college, years ago. I haven't had to redo that expense. So, you know, if you're in for one, if you're so blessed, get in for more because it's cheaper as it goes.
Cheaper by the dozen.
Cheaper by the dozen.
877-573-7825. You're listening to More to Life. We're Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak, and we're talking about parenting today in the light of the theology of the body. Let's work out all those challenges that you're facing in your family.
You know, Greg, just this as an aside, this money issue and kids and being open to kids. I was very blessed to find a blog of a woman the other day who has 10 kids. 4 of them are biological. The rest are adopted internationally. And she happened to put a post up about the fact that people often ask her about the cost of adoption. And she really has a hard time answering that in a way that is succinct and makes sense to people until she hit on the fact that she had been looking for a used car for her oldest daughter who was going off to college. And she realized that for less than a cost of a good used car, you can complete an international adoption. And she realized that the car that she bought her daughter will depreciate in value markedly over the next 5 years, while the value of her children increases into eternity the more she puts into who they are and who they're going to become as self-donative people out in the world, because not only are they people who will live for eternity in Christ, but they're people who will then lead others to Christ if they are formed
in his nature.
And I really love, you know, the when you get down to the dollars and cents, I think she put it together very nicely.
877-573-7825. Where do you feel challenged as a parent? What situations with your kids cause you to doubt yourself? We're here to help you regain that sense of confidence, joy, and peace in your family. There is more to life. Find out how you can claim it at 877-573-7825.
Let's go now to Carrie in Virginia.
Hey there, Carrie. Welcome to More to Life. How can we help you out today?
Hi. Well, right now I feel challenged in bedtime parenting.
Okay.
I have a question. I have 3 kids, 5, 2, and then a newborn who's just 6 weeks old. And we've co-slept with all of them, but right now we're trying to figure out how to transition out of co-sleeping a little bit with the older ones, because obviously my husband probably would be happy to keep them all in the same bed if we could just fit. But I think probably the question really is how to figure out when kids are ready for that. And I think my 5-year-old probably is. She's getting a little past some of her nighttime, you know, scared of the dark fears, but mostly trying to find something that works for the whole family.
Are they all in bed right now with you at the moment?
Well, right now what we have is the baby and me in one room, and then my husband in the other room with the other kids. But we'd like to.
We advise on never, ever, 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 ever splitting husband and wife up to co-sleep
because
or share sleep
point,
in any way. It really defeats
I understand.
Point.
I understand why it happens.
Yeah, because little baby, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. So it's all right. So with the 5-year-old, I mean, you know, I think that it's, you know, we prefer, I mean, you're going to have to kind of see how it goes with each kid, right? Because there isn't a cookie-cutter approach to this. You have to sort of work it out in your relationship and what they're ready to handle. But we prefer a more gentle approach. Like some parents would say, well, just put them in their own room and let them work it out. I think that kind of undermines all the work that you've been doing up to this point, you know, to say you can trust me and I'll be here for you. So we prefer to let the kids kind of take their freedom or take their independence on their own, right? So we would encourage you to kind of move them, maybe move the five-year-old at least onto a mattress on the floor.
One of the things we got for our little kids, they have at the big toy stores, not to give anyone a commercial, but you know, one of your bigger toy stores, they have these little things that look like little couches, and you fold them out and they're actually like little beds, like they're just all foam and they put together. Those are excellent for a five-year-old kiddo to have like at the end of your bed, and they just fold up during the day and they fold out at night, and so they're still close to you, and you approach the kiddo as, hey, you know, you're getting kicked in the head a lot by your two-year-old brother. Okay, this is really tough. We want you with us. How about this is your special bed for now?
Or you can even get her down, you know, in your bed and then move her whenever she's asleep to either that mattress on the floor, or like that fold-out couch Lisa was just talking about, or even her own room, and then letting her know if she wants to come back, if she's afraid in the middle of the night, here's her special place that she can lie down. And again, you have the fold-out couch or a sleeping bag there that if she gets scared, she can come in as long as she can be quiet, that sort of thing. But it sounded like you were going to say something, Carrie. I didn't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, part of the challenge is, and even for a while before her little brother was born, she was sleeping in our room in like a toddler bed, kind of right next to ours. But she really, she says, no, I want to cuddle with you. So she really kind of says, I don't want to be.
Yeah, she likes the cuddles. Well, I would just say,
with you.
Then that's why,
you know?
I would just say, get her to, why don't you start by getting her down with you and the cuddles. And you could even do that. You could either do that in your bed, or you could do it in her bed, or you could do it in this transitional bed that we're talking about. But you get her down with the cuddles, and then once she's asleep, when you can pick her up her arm and drop it without her stirring, because that's when you know that she's in a good deep sleep, then you can pick her up and move her to where you want to move her. You know, and then let her know that if she wakes up, then she can always come back and sleep, you know, at the foot of the bed there in that transitional bed that we were talking about, or even climb up if she has to with you guys, as long as she can be quiet and not wake up everybody.
Yeah, that's the big thing. You know, you have to say, and it does work because we've done this many, many times, to just say, you know, you can come back into bed, but you have to be quiet. You can't wake up your siblings. You can't, you know, make a big deal about it if you can be quiet. Or for some folks, it gets to the point where you say you can't come back into cuddle until the sun is up, you know, or until you hear daddy's alarm clock or whatever it is. It's your choice. But, you know, the big thing about co-sleeping is start as best you can. I realize you have an infant now, but work toward getting you and your husband back in the same bed. Yeah. And be as creative as you want to be. You know, we have friends who live down the road from us. Their kids are all grown now, but they used to just take, you know, twin mattresses, spread them all out over the floor at night, be able to sleep near all their kids because they had a whole brood of boys in their family, a ton of them. And during the day, they'd pile them all up. And then, you know, at night, they'd put them back down again. So they had enough space, and they were all able to hang together until the boys said, hey, I really need some space of my own, and they moved on to their own room.
It works for you.
It's
ultimately
all about creativity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Carrie, I'm going to give you a resource. Nighttime Parenting by Dr. Bill Sears is a really great resource, and also the No Cry Sleep Solution, all two good books for helping you kind of transition your kids into their own space and doing it in a respectful way that they can kind of handle. I want to encourage you to give us a call if there's anything else we can do for you, but I got to let you go now. Thanks for the call, Carrie. And we're taking your calls, folks, at 877-573-7825. More of More to Life coming up after this.
Has your old trusty vehicle let you down? Has the engine developed bad habits of smoking, knocking, or just plain tired? Well, it's time to make the smart investment by replacing your engine, not your car. Let Michigan Motor Exchange provide you with a replacement engine, adding years of life to the vehicle you already own. Don't buy someone else's junk. Since 1945, Michigan Motor Exchange is the engine replacement expert for cars, boats, and trucks. Call 866-MICHMOX.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. From his Catholicism for Cradle Catholic series, we've recently compiled a set of Father John Ricardo teaching on the sacraments of the Church. The 8 CD set is $76 and the MP3 CD is $38. On the Saturday before the March for Life, Archbishop Alan Vigran was joined by Mother Teresa's cardiologist, Dr. Paul Wright, Dr. Janet Smith, Dr. Michael Kinney, and others for the Archdiocese of Detroit's Life is a Gift Conference. That 3-CD set of Putting on the Mind of Christ programs is $28.50. All editions of Crust in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Christ is the Answer, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor Is It, are also available. All single talks and programs are $9.50 each. To place your order for one of these titles or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506 or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Is your son an overachiever and needs an intellectual challenge? Or do you have a son that needs to be motivated to excel? Parents, take a few minutes today to learn how sending your child to the University of Detroit Jesuit High School and Academy can challenge and motivate students to achieve their fullest potential. Visit their website at ufdjesuit.org or by calling 313-862-5400. The University of Detroit Jesuit High School and Academy, forming men for others since 1877.
Welcome back to More to Life. I'm Lisa Popchak.
I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, and we're talking with you about parenting today. Those challenging situations that cause you to doubt yourself or make you feel a little like sending off those kids to a Tibetan boarding school somewhere. You know, we want to get a handle on all that so you can experience the joy and the peace and the love in your heart and family again. 877-573-7825.
Let's go now to Karen in Illinois.
Hey there, Karen. Welcome to More to Life. How can we help you out today?
Hi, I read your book, Parenting with Grace, and I still have a question left. I
just one?
Just one, all right. Well,
I guess
you're
more thorough than we thought. Okay, just one. And I promise if you get more, you can still call back.
Maybe.
So what's up, Karen?
Yeah, well, the fact is I'm a little tired of people telling me that my child is normal when he's the only one who's like this out of dozens of children. We go to a gymnastics class, and all the other children are participating with their parents. They're holding their ropes and their hula hoops and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And mine is off running all the way across the gym doing something else. I can't keep him with everyone else, or he'll stiffen up and scream and kick. And in the cry room at church, I'm one of those people who is actually grateful there's a cry room, because otherwise we wouldn't go to church. But even in the cry room, he's running around the pews, and you can't catch him and make him hold still. I don't know what to do. He's the only one that's like this, even in the cry room.
Is he like this at home for you, Karen?
He can be strong-willed. He's not constantly running like he is in public, but he can be just as strong-willed as him.
Okay, running and strong-willed, two different things. That's okay. When does he sit still for you at home?
When he's watching television, he'll sit still and watch a show about trains that he really likes.
Okay, how about when you're reading him a book or playing a game or coloring?
If it's a book he likes, he's still. If it's an unfamiliar book, it's kind of hard to keep his attention in coloring, so only do that for about 10 seconds, and then he's doing something else.
Okay, that's pretty normal for two. Coloring is tough at 2 years old. Here's the thing. I can guarantee you pretty well, I mean, I've only talked to you for a couple of minutes, that you're not talking about a hyperactive child. If he can sit still when he's watching TV or when he's listening to a book that he likes, there's a capability there, okay? So he can take that behavior and learn it in other behaviors.
Yeah, he's got some bad habits, but mm-hmm. he's got the capability of handling
it. Exactly. And when you have that capability, there's great, great hope.
I would say, Karen, that you want to have, there are two things I'm going to recommend to you. The first one is being still practice. Which is going to sound sort of funny, but I think that, you know, having him, when you're reading to him, I want you to have him on your lap when you're reading to him. And, you know, I want you to, you know, not restrain him in the sense of, you know, keeping him there for 20 minutes and him fighting you and all that, but saying to him, I can only do this with you if you're sitting on my lap. And, you know, if he starts to wiggle, okay, honey, I need you to stay here for one more minute. And just kind of, you know, take him to his limit and then take him maybe 1 minute more, right? And then let him get down and do his thing. But the next time, you know, again, take him to his limit and then take him another minute more with just holding him still and cuddling with him. Because you want to give him that practice of staying with you. And you want to extend that over a period of time so that he understands that there are times when he just needs to be still and be quiet and be with you and be calm. The other thing that's going to be really, really important, we do talk about this in Parenting with Grace, is the hold hands or hold you rule. Especially like in the cry room or whatever, you know, wherever he cannot be getting down and running around places, he either is holding your hand or you're holding him. There is no running around at two, because two-year-olds don't have any kind of ability to discriminate where they should run and where they shouldn't run.
Right, you just don't let a kid down at church, even if you're in the cry room, because you're asking for, you know, total bedlam for you and everybody else at the Mass.
So as soon as, you know, before you even let him out of the car, you know, you're holding his hand. If he fights you in holding his hand, you pick him up and you hold him, and you let him know, honey, I would be happy to put you down and let you use your feet as long as you're willing to hold my hand. But if you can't hold my hand, then I get to hold you. What's it going to be? Yeah, anyway, if you ever have to take a child out of church, you never put them down. You hold them until they're calm enough to bring them back into church so they understand that they have more freedom as long as they can be calm and still. But if you take them out of church and let them run around in the back or whatever, that's what they'll always choose.
I want you to structure his day more. So I want about 25-minute intervals where he's got, you know, 20 to 25 minutes of doing something that requires sitting. If that's playing with Play-Doh, fine. If that's playing with Duplo blocks, fine, you're there, you're present, you're engaging him. Then he gets to get up and he gets to run around. Get one of those indoor exercise trampolines, the small ones. Get at a garage sale, they're cheap. Assign him jumping on that thing for 10 minutes. Then move him to something that requires sitting. Then take him outside for a walk. You need to get this kid to understand the difference between times he can move and where and when, and ways to sit down and still be able to concentrate.
So increasing that structure and also the practice that he gets with sort of being still and quiet will help increase his attention span and help him be more on task. Karen, we do have other suggestions in Parenting with Grace. I know you already have the book. But to go back through the toddler section, I think you'll find it helpful. Thanks for the call. If there's more that we can do for you folks, don't hesitate to give us a holler at the Pastoral Solutions Institute. Check out all the resources we have there for you at moretoliferadio.com. Including the Pastoral Solutions Institute's telephone counseling practice, where you can work with me or one of my associates in getting your marriage, family, or personal life to that next level. You can call to make an appointment at 740-266-6461 or just check us out at moretoliferadio.com. And when you're tempted to settle, always remember, there really is more to life.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck is produced by Ave Maria Radio in association with the Pastoral Solutions Institute. Find out more at moretoliferadio.com. More to Life is made possible on Ave Maria Radio in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, building community one business at a time. CatholicBusinessPages.com. More to Life, the life you were meant to live.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Heart to Heart, a Catholic women's apostolate, is celebrating their 12th anniversary this Thursday at Domino's Farms. To celebrate, international award-winning landscaper and garden designer John Collin will share the many ways in which he has brought Christ to the world through his creation. John's presentation starts at 7:30 p.m., and men are invited to attend as well. For more on this celebration, go to hearttoheartcwa.com, and we'll see you this Thursday, the 10th.
At Advanced Dentistry Center, they don't expect to hear things like,
I love going to the dentist!
But as one patient put it, Dr. Maddie makes going to the dentist an okay thing. He also makes it affordable with exams and x-rays for just $29. And that's not a limited or first-time offer. It's all the time. Discover the art of dentistry at Advanced Dentistry Center at 13 Mile and Telegraph. Your smile deserves a call to 248-594-9592 or click AdvancedDentistryCenter.com.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Abortion advocates call today the National Day of Appreciation for Abortion Providers. They want to make heroes of those who kill babies. Former abortionist Dr. Tony Levitino comments, 8 years of performing abortions affirming a woman's right to choose. Over 1,200 innocent children in 5 years of private practice, shredded in suction